It's recording. Okay, SpongeBob. I'm not ready.
Okay.
I don't even know. This is part two of Elizabeth. What is it again?
Bowtry.
I was going to say battery again, but for the last time. Part two. Welcome back to Crime Cat's True Crime Podcast. I'm Jackie, and Jessica will be continuing the story of the Blood Countess Elizabeth Bowtry. So thanks for listening. Please follow us on all... Please follow us on all social media. You can find us on Facebook at Crime Cat's A True Crime Podcast, where we have a discussion group. We are on Instagram at crimecats.truecrime and Twitter at Crime Cats Pod. Please reach out. We love seeing your messages and opinions. Thanks again for listening.
Insane, disturbed tale of Elizabeth Bowtry. Oh, and happy Halloween! When you get this episode, it is going to be the day before Halloween. And Jackie and I both love Halloween. We pretty much live for it all year.
I mean, I have skulls in my house 24/7, 365.
So. Right? You should see our houses, though, for real. We're all out. In my house is decked out for the party.
That is past tense.
That you're right. Now it is past tense. But you guys, we are here and ready to tell you a torturous tale of murder. So let's jump right back into Elizabeth's bath of blood. If you haven't listened to episode one, stop. Go back, because you're going to be super confused, because we're just jumping.
Just keep going.
We're jumping right in, back to where we were. So, Elizabeth's husband, Ference Nasty, dies on January the 4th of 1604 at the age of 48. Although the exact nature of his illness, which led to his death, is unknown. It seems to have started in 1601 and initially caused debilitating pain in his legs. And,
I have that every day.
Right, in my knees. Crickety crack, crack. But he literally, like, just one day stopped being able to walk. Like, he was completely paralyzed from the waist down, eventually. He never recovered and eventually, succumbed from his illness, his unknown illness. Before he had passed, the couple was married for 29 years. Before he did die, he entrusted his heirs and widow to his cousin, Jorge. There it is again. That's the same name as her dad, Jorge. It's a very popular name.
Okay.
His name is Jorge Thurzo, and it's kind of an interesting factoid that he actually eventually was the one to lead the investigation into Elizabeth's crimes. Her person who was supposed to be taking care of her is the one. So after her husband died, Elizabeth became exponentially more extreme and cruel. Records indicate from her trials that Elizabeth became obsessed with shoving needles under the girl's fingernails.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I mean, that just upsets me. Nails are really like, ugh, I just can't.
That hurts.
It hurts me physically. And also into their faces.
So in the nails in the face.
Nails, not like fingernails.
Like, nails. Like nail nails.
Yeah. And needles. into their face. Oof. She would also bite chunks of flesh off of their bodies, poke their breast with sharp pincers. Finally, in 1610, the authorities began to take notice when Lady Bathory opened a finishing school.
Bathory. See, I do that too.
See, it's hard. It's hard because for so long, that's what we thought our name was.
Until we found out.
Until it's Bowtry. And I'm like, what?
I guess it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter. You guys know who we're talking about. But she eventually opens a finishing school for noble women.
To kill them, maybe?
And that's her downfall. Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's really why. It's literally why. I just took a stab in the dark.
Yep. And she opens this finishing school, and then all of a sudden, all these young noble girls begin dying in alarming numbers. But because she had already depleted all of the source of the impoverished girls, all of the serfs and all of her serving girls were gone because she killed them all. There weren't any more.
Oh God, that's a lot of people to kill.
Yeah. I mean, she literally killed them all. There was no one left of the age period that she liked.
Yeah.
You know?
She liked the young ones.
She liked young ones, young girls.
Don't we all?
Eventually,
just keep
going. Their families took the matter to the King of Hungary, Matthias II. Now, the Countess did not work alone. She did have a close network of servants who were privy to the activities of the secret inner chambers of her castles. Anna Daruvia, which, remember, if you remember her from the first episode, she was the closest with her. She was her main accomplice. She was the one that came around in 1604
mm-hmm.
and was a supposed witch. She supposedly honed Countess's torture skills and instructed her other servants on how to torture and kill, which I think really no one else killed anyone. I think the Countess was the only one who was actually killing, but they all tortured together.
That's so unnecessary.
The other servants consisted of 3 older women and 1 young man. They were Iona Joe, which was the Countess's former wet nurse and kind of like nanny. And then a friend of Joe by the name of Dorka, who Joe and Dorka, Dorka.
Yeah, Dorka.
They often
We're 5 years old. I it's know, fine. Right?
They often tried to outdo each other, which is disgusting. They would compete on who could attempt or who could inflict more pain on their victims.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah, it's gross.
That's not cool.
Other members of the accomplices was an elderly washwoman named Cathalyn, which is the same name of Elizabeth's daughter, but not the same person. And then the youngest of the clan was a disfigured teen by the name of Fitzgo. And he was also known as the kid, or just kid.
The kid. That's so, okay.
Like,
all right.
I mean, he was just this little messed up kid who Aww. They twisted into this disgusting
pervert.
Clearly, yeah. The women supervised and terrorized all of the young girls in the Countess' employ. All of those in her inner circle admitted to participating in Lady Bathory's torture sessions. However, when Thorzo finally accused her, the lady herself laid blame squarely at her servant's door, claiming she allowed them to do such things because even I, myself, was afraid of them. Speaking of her clan, you know, mm-hmm. of people. So when she was accused, she's like, oh, they did it all. I was just letting them, which is bullshit.
Yeah, right.
Like, you're the lady of the house and you're just going to be cool with people murdering and torturing people in your chambers? I don't think so.
Obviously, she was in on it. I mean,
she was the ringleader. Finally, in late 1610, King Matthias assigned Jorge Thurzo to investigate. Thurzo was the Palatine, which was the prime minister of Hungary. Thurzo ordered two notaries to collect evidence in March 1610.
Man, if I knew notaries could collect evidence and be crime investigation, I'd be all over it.
Yeah, I'm a notary.
I wonder if I need to look into that.
Right? That would be fun. Let me know. I'll be your assistant.
All right.
The notaries collected testimony in 1610 and 1611 of more than 300 witnesses, which is a lot of people.
That's
300
witnesses.
I mean, can you imagine? And back then, they didn't have computers or recordings. They had to, like, you know, sit there and quill ink it all out. The trial records include testimony of four defendants, as well as 13 witnesses. Priests, noblemen, and commoners were all questioned. The witnesses included the castellan and other personnel from the castle. 34 were servants of the countess's neighbors. These witnesses told lurid tales of bruising and beaten young women, stripped and left to die of exposure, mutilation of hands, biting of flesh off of faces, arms, and other body parts, and lots of times freezing and starving to death.
Okay, but why didn't they come forth
before? Because everyone was afraid of her. Everyone was afraid of her not only because she was a scary-ass lady, but she's rich and powerful.
I don't care.
I know.
Like,
I don't care.
Maybe, like, one, I'd be like, oh, that was an accident.
Right.
But two and three and 10 and 20.
Hundreds.
Like, all right, like, bitch, I'm on tell on you.
Her final count in the end was, like, 600 people.
Yeah.
Supposedly. There were many suspected forms of torture that Elizabeth was a fan of. The castle warden, Benedict Bissery, claimed to know of these secret torture rooms.
However, this must have been where BDSM was born.
Right. I mean, she was supposedly also, not only was she a torturess, she was supposedly very sexually promiscuous for the time.
Well, she had a kid when she was, like, 12.
Exactly. She was very sexually active, and she had all these kids with her husband, which back then, that's normal to have a lot of children, but he was gone all the time, so I'm sure...
Not all of them were his.
Yeah, exactly.
Dun, dun, dun.
In my opinion.
Oh, mine too.
The castle warden, he claimed to know these secret torture rooms. However, he said he heard cries of pain and the sound of the whips, but he said he never saw any evidence of this torture himself. Anyone who was allowed into these secret rooms reported that there was no sign of anything.
It's called cleaning it up after yourself.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean anything, guys.
Doctors that were called to the castle to tend to sick people said that they had never seen any marks on any of their patients, although admittedly, they were only allowed to see their faces. So I'm guessing when they would come, the doctors would come, the patients would be in the bed with the blankets pulled all the way up to their face. And the girls that she's stabbing in the face with needles are probably not being called doctor upon.
I can't wrap my head around, like, stabbing someone in the face with a needle.
Ugh, I know. How do you even hold the needle to stab someone, like we said earlier?
I mean, there's a whole... That's why I do think a lot of this is, like, fabricated.
Same.
They just tried to make her out to be... I mean, she probably did kill a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the torture techniques. I'm not sure. I don't know. It makes for a good story, though.
It does. Before Thurzo would officially arrest Elizabeth, he wanted to make absolutely sure she was guilty. Because remember, again, Thurzo is promised her dead husband and his cousin that he would take care of her. So he probably felt pretty guilty for investigating her.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, he had himself and the king invited to the castle for dinner. Elizabeth was frantically nervous. She tried to act the gracious hostess, but she was super, like, paranoid.
I would be, too.
Because, you know, she's probably got dead people in her, you know, basement.
Yeah. Okay, John Wayne Gacy.
Right? Things actually, though, went pretty well, up until dessert. She served the men cakes. And upon their very first bite of their cakes, the men started feeling unwell. Convinced the countess had tried to poison them, the men made a pretty speedy exit. They're like, let's get out of here.
I mean, I get it, but it takes a long time to poison somebody.
Yeah, not immediately, yeah. The first bite.
I mean, I would have done ate the whole thing and then been like, all right, bitch, I feel bad. Bye.
Eventually, Thurzo finally went to arrest the countess on December 30th, 1610. And he arrived to the castle with armed guards. They awaited outside the castle gates. And before long, the countess and her lady steward, Erzsi
Majorovia?
Majorovia?
There you go. That's it.
Erzsi Majorovia. They came out to cast a protective spell designed to protect the countess and bring death upon Thurzo. Because she really saw this coming, you know.
Yeah.
She knew that they were getting all these witness statements. And then, you know, she knew that she was in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
She actually at one point went and wrote a will for her children.
She knew
it was coming. Yeah, she totally knew that she was in trouble. She knew that it was up. The gig was up. So she wrote a will. She got everything ready. She got all of her jewels into her. I think she was like putting her jewels into her clothing.
To hide it?
To try and hide them. So she could bring them into prison with her, which is crazy.
Because that's the first thing I think right? about is wearing my jewels to prison, y'all.
Yeah. Well, you can see where her priorities are.
Mm-hmm.
The men listened to these incantations that Erzsi was spouting. And then eventually the ladies went back inside. The men followed immediately, finding a dead body in her foyer.
Like just hanging out there?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's what it said in the foyer, which I thought was interesting. Like, why wouldn't she hide
foyer.
It?
Foyer.
Foyer.
Right? I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, did somebody put it there? Did she forget to hide it?
I don't know. It seems pretty fishy, especially since she had just walked through there.
Exactly.
Doesn't
seem like something she would do.
Started hearing screams. So they followed these screams to the torture chamber and claims to have caught her in the act. Which is interesting because, again, she was just outside doing the incantation. So she's going to seize all these people outside and just like, okay, well, it's time to go get one more torture session
right.
in before.
That doesn't even make sense, to be honest.
It doesn't. But there's a little evidence, again, to substantiate this caught-in-the-act theory. But what was discovered for sure was there was a dead body of a girl and another girl who was severely injured but alive. The injured girl, named Anna, stated at the scene that the countess did indeed beat her and had hit her, but it was Beneski who had ripped her flesh. But once she was no longer on the scene and they had taken her back to town, Anna had changed her story. She now claimed that it was the countess herself who had destroyed her hand and her arm. Anna later was awarded 50 guilders, which I guess is like golds, 15 pounds of wheat, and a small farm as free property, all courtesy to Thurzo. Thurzo also arrested 4 of Elizabeth's servants who were accused of being accomplices. Dorca, again. Ilana Joke. and those two were the ones that we used to, like, play against each other. And then Catalin. And then Janos, who is also known as Fiski, or the kid. The Countess was put under house arrest and allowed to remain at home. And the rest of the her accomplices were all taken to prison.
Okay.
Which seems fair, you know. She gets to stay home and chill.
Yeah, totally fair.
And under arrest, in quotes. I keep doing that like you guys can see me.
Oh, yeah. She's totally over here, like, quoting the air. I'm just going with it, man.
While the Countess was locked up in the dungeons, the notaries began to collect witness testimonies against her.
See? I need to be able to do this as a notary.
And I keep saying, I'm terrible at enum. I took speech in college, and that was my biggest problem. My speech teacher, she was like, you've got to stop saying every other word. And I'm working on it.
It's hard habit to break.
It is. I'm working on it. These testimonies, they were mostly from servants at both of her castles. She had several castles, but there was two main castles that most of her servants lived. They came forward to testify, or Joe named them under torture because they weren't getting anything from Joe, Alana Joe. So they tortured her to get information. The henchmen attempted to mitigate their involvement by laying blame at each other. And at Anna Drovilla, who somehow deceased. I couldn't figure out when she died or how she died. But she did. I don't know how she died or when. But she died before the Countess was arrested. But according to her henchmen, which I just love that word. Can you just say that more? Her henchmen's, according to them,
another metal band name. Henchmen. There's probably already one there.
I'm sure.
We're just going to start a list of metal band names that we can come up with.
Yes.
In our podcast. All right. Sorry.
No, it's great. Lady Baffery only occasionally killed when her husband was alive. But after Ferent's death, her murders became much more numerous.
She was bored.
Right? She was bored, and she was probably very stressed out because once he died, then she's in charge of everything.
I mean, I guess if that's the way you want to handle your stress.
Right, lady? Talk about snapped.
Shoot.
Her murders placed the numbers of deaths that were between 30 to 50 before his death. And then afterwards, this figure of 650 deaths were on the Countess's reputation.
That's a lot of freaking people.
Yeah. I mean, 650. I mean, that's why everyone thinks she's a mass murderer but this all just came from one single girl. All of these mass numbers. The 650 number came from.
That's very hot. You'd be very busy.
Right?
And somebody would have noticed before then.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
I don't know.
The number came from one single servant girl named Susanna. It was unlikely Susanna was literate.
Maybe she couldn't count.
Exactly. And somehow, however, she said that there was a ledger that was kept by one of the officials that worked for her.
Like names of people.
Names of the victims, yes.
Was that ever found?
There was never mention any ledger in the trials, and no one ever found or presented to the court as evidence this ledger.
So it ain't real.
Basically. So Susanna is just trying to hype up and make it all seem much scarier than it really was.
Yeah.
So we don't know. This is, again, all completely unsubstantiated. Thurzo debated proceedings with Elizabeth's son, Paul, and two of her son-in-laws. A trial and execution would have caused a public scandal and would have disgraced a noble and influential family, which at the time, like I said earlier, she had a family member that was a Polish king
Mm-hmm.
And she had another several family members that ruled, basically, Transylvania. And Elizabeth's considerable properties would have been seized by the crown. Thurzo, along with Paul and her two son-in-laws, originally planned for Elizabeth to be spirited away to a nunnery. But...
like, that's going to help.
The accounts of the murder of the daughters of the lesser nobility spread, and it was agreed that Elizabeth would be kept under strict house arrest, and that would be that further punishments should be avoided.
Okay, but didn't she just stay at her house and kill these people all the time anyways?
Exactly.
Like, it's not like she left to kill them. So with, nope. They literally just did nothing.
Pretty much. King Matthias urged Thurzo to bring Elizabeth to trial and suggested that she be sentenced to death. So the king was taking this for real, mm-hmm. but Thurzo was convinced that it would make him look bad, the king. So he convinced the king that way that it would, you know, make him look bad because he allowed this to happen for so long.
Yeah.
So Thurzo's motivation is debated by scholars. We don't know if he's doing this, A, because he promised her husband that he would take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
Or B, he's worried about the fact that the person that originally fingered her. God.
What?
Pointed the finger.
Oh, that was good.
The person that originally pointed the finger was a religious clergyman. So no one really knows why he wanted to keep her, quote unquote, safe.
I guess he, never mind, I can say that, just keep going.
It was decided basically that Matthias would not have to repay his very large debt that he owed Elizabeth. But Elizabeth herself, she actually wanted a trial. She believed that if she could put her case on in person, that she could absolve herself. She figured that
she's pulling a Ted Bundy.
She thought that she could, yeah, she thought that she could talk her way out of it.
She thought she could be her own criminal defense.
She did. She really did. But Thurzo never gave her the chance. He eventually had joined Lady Bathory's relatives on a visit to her prison cell, where the Countess was once again demanding trial and once again refused. Elizabeth furiously rounded Thurzo, threatening him as a dire consequences of his illegal actions. The furious Thurzo responded, "You, Ersabet, are like a wild animal, and you do not deserve to breathe the air on earth or see the light of the Lord. You shall disappear from this world and never reappear in it again." And supposedly those are his actual
words. Damn, that's some words.
Yeah, it is. Some suggest Thurzo was trying to fulfill his promise again to Fernick of protecting his wife and sparing her children of the shame of a public trial and execution. However, lots of people also think that he was trying to protect himself.
That's 99% of what people do.
Yep. An act of parliament would have been required to bring someone of Elizabeth's status to trial. That would have set a precedent for Thurzo that he wanted to avoid. It could have opened the floodgates, allowing other monarchs to dispose of inconvenient nobles. Thurzo, as a Protestant, was also nervous of his situation with the religion, again, because there is just this huge back and forth between Catholics and Protestants. So he was talking with King Matthias and just pretty much talked him out of it. Selling it to the king as a form of damage control.
Mm-hmm.
A public trial would have not only discredited the Bathory's, but also Ference. He was who's a celebrated national hero. See, I write words that I can't even pronounce.
We all do. That's fine.
He was a national hero pretty much for his war hero for the Guam War.
Okay.
So ultimately, eventually,
Were you trying to say revered?
Yes.
That's okay. Yeah. I was like, revered? What the fuck
is that? Revered, God. I speak English, y'all. Alabama education.
I speak the English.
Thurzo persuaded anxious nobles to petition the king to keep her at home.
Where she does her murdering.
Right. But eventually, once she was technically charged, she was imprisoned in solitary confinement, which, remember, again, she hates being alone. So that is really bad
for her. That is the worst punishment for her, then.
It really was. She was kept in a set of rooms, bricked completely in, with only a small slit left open for ventilation and the passing of food.
Oh, wow.
She remained in prison there for 4 years until she died. So she died pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Which a lot of people say she may have died.
How old was she when she died?
She was in her 40s. Mm. Late 40s, early 50s. Other than one guard, she was completely alone. She was miserable, which is good because we wanted her to be miserable. On the evening of August 21st, 1614, Elizabeth complained to her bodyguard that her hands were cold, whereupon he replied, "It's nothing, mistress. Just go lay down. Go lie down." She went to sleep and was found dead the following morning. She was buried in the church on the 25th of November, 1614. But according to some sources, due to the villagers' uproar of having the Blood Countess buried in their cemetery.
So wait, she was buried 3 months after she died?
Yeah, I thought that was odd too.
Huh.
But I think, I don't know if, I was thinking maybe it had something to do with snow, but August, I don't know why they wouldn't.
I guess it depends, you know.
Buried her.
Right, I don't know. Interesting.
It is interesting. But, the villagers were super upset about having her buried in their cemetery. They had to actually move her body to her home in Essex, where she was put into the family crypt. And then in 1995, someone decided to open that crypt.
No way.
Yep. And guess what?
What?
She's not there. So they don't know where she is. Her body is actually completely unknown where she is to this day.
What?
Yeah, so...
So somebody moved her.
Somebody moved her again for a third time, because she's not in the crypts.
Crazy.
None of the churches or castles have any markings for her grave. So, no one knows where her body is.
I bet it's in New Orleans. I'm just kidding. That's where everybody ends up.
Right? Many people have actually argued that Elizabeth Bowtry was a victim of a vast political conspiracy against her.
That's another
approach. You know me, I love myself a good conspiracy theory.
Yes, you do, girl.
These theories argue that the proceedings against her were completely politically motivated and possibly due to her extensive wealth and ownership of large areas in the land of Hungary.
I mean, this could just all be completely fabricated.
Could be. Think about it. She was a very powerful,
wealthy woman.
Wealthy, smart, illiterate woman of power. They didn't like women at all in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Much less a woman in power.
And we still struggle with it.
It is true. Wage inequality is the thing.
Yeah.
I can't imagine them, because they just didn't respect women at all.
No.
They thought that women, you know.
They were to clean, cook, have kids.
Yep. So. That's it.
Yeah.
But here she is ruling an entire, basically a kingdom.
Yeah.
By herself.
I mean, that's kind of like Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
The first with the, yeah.
Yep. This theory is consistent with the Hungarian history at the time, which also includes religious and political conflicts, especially relating to the wars with the Ottoman Empire, and the spread of Protestantism and the extension of the Habsburg power over Hungary. But there are a lot of counter arguments to this theory. The investigation into Báthory's crimes sparked complaints from a Lutheran minister, which does not contribute to the notion of the Catholic Habsburg plot against the Protestant Báthory. Although religious tension is still possibly a source of the conflict, but she was raised Calvinist, not Lutheran. Plus the testimony of around 300 witnesses and lots of physical evidence that was collected by the investigators. But, you know, they could have placed that crap.
Happens
every day.
Yeah, totally.
So, I'm not totally against that theory.
I'm not either. I mean, it sounds pretty plausible. Because just the whole story itself seems way over-exaggerated.
Exactly.
I have an easier time believing that than...
I mean, I think that she was definitely a murderer, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
I think she was
fucked up in the head.
I think that she had to have at least killed some people.
Maybe she was into BDSM and she liked to beat her women. She was a lesbian and they didn't like women or lesbians. And one day she spanked somebody's ass way too hard.
Totally possible.
There's all kinds of shit that could, I mean, go out there.
That's true. Well, the case of Elizabeth Báthory, regardless of what we believe, has definitely inspired lots of pop culture over the years. The most common theme of these works was that of the Countess bathing in her victim's blood to retain beauty and youth.
I mean, that's just metal right there.
Tis.
Bathing in blood. That's another... Did we already say that?
I don't know, but we're racking up our names over here.
I'm going to start a band, man.
This legend appeared in print for the very first time in 1729 in Laszlo's Tragic Historia, which was the first written account of the Báthory case. The story came into question in 1817 when the witness accounts, which surfaced in 1765, were published for the very first time. They included no references to bloodbaths, though. Note that. In his book, Hungary and Transylvania, published in 1850, John Paget describes the supposed origins of Báthory's blood bathing, although his tale seems to be a fictionalized recitation of oral history from this area, which again, word of mouth, rumors. Sadistic pleasure is definitely considered a far more plausible motive for the crimes. The emergence of the bloodbath or bloodseeker for vanity myth coincided with the vampire scares that haunted Europe in the early 18th century, reaching even into the educated and scientific circles. But the strong connection between bloodbath or bloodseeker myth and the vampiric myth was not made until the 1970s. The first connections were made to promote works of fiction by linking them to already commercially successful Dracula stories.
And everybody loves a good Dracula story.
Everybody. Thus, in 1970, a movie based on Báthory and the bloodbath seeker vanity myth was titled Countess Dracula. Some Báthory biographers have tried to establish this myth and the historical Elizabeth Báthory as in a source of influence for Bram Stoker's 1897 Dracula, which is my favorite one.
Yes, I didn't know that book was that old.
Well, no, that the book was that old.
I know, I didn't know it was that old.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it was old, but I didn't know it was 1800s old.
That movie, though, is so good.
That's a good one.
Gosh, yeah. Keanu Reeves.
Hello.
But those pointing and similarities of settings of motives and the fact that Stoker may have read about her were a lot of reasons that they thought that he drew influence from her.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Bautry had also become an influence for modern vampire literature and films. The story, while retaining the essential facts, receives an imaginative interpretation in the horror novelist Syra Bond's Cold Blood. And much later, she eventually shows up in George R.R. Martin's
Hello!
A Song of Ice and Fire novels, and not only one way, but in multiple ways. There's also a character named Mad Danelle Lothenson, who is rumored to have stolen children from the lands surrounding her castle, Harrenhal, and bathed in their blood. Which obviously was inspired.
He must have been inspired a lot by this.
Well, he was inspired a lot by this and also the Game of the War of Roses.
Oh, that is.
Which that's a whole nother giant bag of crap. but the War of Roses was he's said that that was his inspiration.
Okay.
But there have been countless movies, plays, books that were all about basically her.
It's not going to stop. I mean, it's a good story.
It's really not. I mean, this tale and this vile tale of the Bloody Lady, the Blood Countess. That's it, you guys. I mean, there's so much to say about her. We could talk all day just because
there's a lot of information.
There's a lot of information.
But, you know, we don't know if it's true or not.
We
or
don't.
If it was a conspiracy or she really was the most prolific serial killer.
What she could also be something in between, which is what I believe.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely 100% do not think she killed upwards of 600 people.
No, that's just too absurd.
Maybe like 60. I don't know.
I don't know.
Even some of the biggest ones out there, though, have only reached, like, 30s.
Yeah.
Except
for Samuel Little.
Oh, shit. Yeah, we got to cover him, man.
We're definitely going to cover
That's
him.
A good one.
Maybe he'll be our next one.
If there's enough information out there.
Yeah, well, we're going to definitely research him.
That's a good one.
So, guys, what do you think? What do you think? Do you think she was this, or she was a conspiracy? Let us know in the group. We got our discussion group for just this very reason.
We love having discussions about cases. And if you want to submit a case for us to cover,
please,
we would love that. I know we've been covering a lot of high profile cases, but we really would love to do some research on some cases in your hometown. So
yes. And not just historical cases.
Right.
Some newer cases, too. So we were just talking about that. We really want to get, because our last three cases have all been
High profile
and historical. So give us some good ones. Again, we're going to start shouting out every single episode and thanking y'all for leaving us our 5-star reviews and for being social with us. So if you leave reviews, please leave us your name
and city and state.
That way we can thank you. If you do leave a comment or a review without a comment, then we can't thank you because it doesn't show your name.
Yeah, Apple won't release any of that. So.
Apple's annoying.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, I wouldn't want everybody to have my name.
That's true. But I am glad that.
Because what if I left a really negative comment and they were like, you're a bitch.
But we'll never do that. Even
if you leave a negative comment, that is totally your opinion. I mean, just don't get nasty with it.
Right,
you know.
Thanks. Okay, thanks, bye. but we do want to shout out our one Apple Podcast reviewer who has left a comment that we haven't thanked yet. We want to thank you, New to Noise. We're not sure who you are, but thanks.
I would love to know who you are, though.
Yeah.
So if you would leave us a comment.
On who you are.
On our Facebook page or Instagram, let us know who you are. Or you can stay totally anonymous. It's fine. We love our social media family. Thank you for those who are active in our group, like Nicole King, Amy Gallimore, Lauren Delgado, which, you know, I know all these girls forever. And we just thank you so much for your support. You guys are awesome and you keep us going. We're on Facebook at Crime Cats, a true crime podcast, where we have our discussion group we just mentioned. We're on Instagram at crimecats.truecrime and Twitter at crimecatspod. We are so glad to be giving these episodes to you bi-weekly. And hopefully maybe one day we can start doing them weekly when we get, you know, we're busy people. We have, Jessica has three jobs. I have a job and two children. So we'll get there. But thank you again for listening and stay spooky.